This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball. Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
Our card this week is card number 713, Willie Hernandez, pitcher for the Detroit Tigers.
Looking forward to this one, but before we get to Willie, we have follow-up on last week's episode about Tom Bolton.
I just wanted to make one correction. In last week's episode, I misspoke. I said that Gary Gillette wrote Tom Bolton's Sabre bio, and I got a little bit ahead of myself because Gary Gillette wrote today's Sabre bio for Willie Hernandez. Apologies to David Moore. David Moore actually wrote Tom Bolton's Sabre bio. Gary wrote the Willie Hernandez Sabre bio that we will rely on today. We did link to the correct Sabre bio in the Tom Bolton episode, but I just wanted to say that and apologize to David.
Well, thank you for that. We've got the record cleared, but why are we talking about Willie Hernandez today?
We recently covered a Detroit Tiger with Tom Brookins, and we forgot to visit the RBI corner. So we said, we got to do another Tiger soon. And then on November 20th of 2023, Willie Hernandez passed away, so we thought it would be a good opportunity to celebrate Willie Hernandez's life and his career and to talk about his card in the 1988 top set. He does have a Sabre bio, as I just said, by Gary Gillette. He also has an obituary by Sam Gazejack at ripbaseball.com. Before we start, I did want to make a note, and this is relevant to a very popular television program in my household, and that is Sesame Street. The same week that Willie Hernandez passed away, there was a Sesame Street episode about being proud of your name. And in that episode, the character Rosita joins a basketball team with Elmo, and the coach mishears her and calls her Rosie. Rosita keeps messing up, and she keeps missing the ball because everybody says, "Rosie, catch the ball," and that's not her name. And so she finally has to correct her coach and say, "My name is Rosita, and I'm proud of my name." Willie Hernandez, late in his career, asked to be called Guillermo rather than Willie. For 15 years prior, coaches, baseball cards, the media all called him Willie Hernandez. And then he said, "I'd prefer to be called Guillermo," in about 1988. I don't know if anybody ever asked him early in his career what he wanted to be called, if he was just a go-along, get-along guy early in his career. If you are new to the mainland U.S., coming from Puerto Rico, and the media, your coaches, all say, "That's Willie," and you just go with it, you become Willie Hernandez. If you raise a stink about it, people think that you're being disrespectful, especially back in the 70s, 80s. Roberto Clemente saw this when he told people, "My name is not Bob." Baseball cards would put Bob Clemente, and then he would correct and say, finally, in the late 60s, it was Roberto. Willie Hernandez dealt with that. And late in his career, he actually said he wanted to be called something different. And fans didn't take kindly to it. And the media didn't take kindly to it. And they called him, "Willie, don't call me Guillermo Hernandez." We're going to probably switch or refer to him as Willie because he's referred to that on the card. And also because in 2019, and before his death, he had softened his stance on this and basically said he didn't care what people called him. We'll get to that a little bit later, but just know that if we switch between names or refer to him as Willie, we mean no disrespect, and it's more just that in most of the things and most of the printed obituaries as well, he's referred to as Willie, and I don't think by the end of his life it was top of his mind.
Let's go to the front of card 713. This is a very green card, David. We have Willie Hernandez in his big glasses, big mustache, very bright white Tigers jersey with black, long sleeve black undershirt, black hat. I guess are they black or navy?
They're dark blue.
Dark blue, right? Hard to see on the Jumbotron is making it show black, but it's that dark navy Tigers blue. And what appears to be an optical illusion behind Hernandez, as if you kind of squint one way, you can see that he's standing in front of a green outfield wall with the top half of a palm tree behind him and maybe some other tree on the right-hand side. But if you squinted the other way, or if maybe just like those 3D things where you let your eyes kind of flip out, it's not a wall. It's a long field. He's in a verdant field of green that stretches out from miles behind him. And there's trees very, very far in the distance. And he's not in spring training. He is just out in the middle of a huge pasture.
The way that the cart is set up, too, the grass that is below his right elbow and his right hand, it looks almost the same color as that wall behind him. You also have the green nameplate that for some reason they decided to give the Tigers the great color scheme of green and orange. But this is an optical illusion behind him. But that is a padded wall and a very tall palm tree. I think this is the first palm tree we've had in the background. Or visible palm tree. You couldn't see any of the trees behind Tom Bolton. Hernandez here has giant glasses. You can see a little bit of a reflection in it, but can't make out what that is. His hair at this point was more small. It was smaller than early career Willie Hernandez when he was with the Phillies. He had a much longer, fuller head of hair that his hat would kind of rest on. But he's got the great mustache. This is two Tigers in a row with fantastic mustaches that go beyond their lip, kind of curling around. It's a good look. And he also has kind of a mean mug here.
Yeah, he doesn't look too happy for picture day. We do love it when that mustache goes into the southern hemisphere. It's a good look, a little bit of a mean look, but a good looking card. Let's go to the back of 713, and we have Willie Hernandez, pitcher, height 6'2", 185, left-handed thrower and batter, signed by the Phillies as a free agent in 1973, born November 14th, 1954 in Aguada, Puerto Rico, with a home in Rio Piedras, Puerto Rico.
His given name at birth was Guillermo Hernandez Villanueva. I imagine today, if he were playing baseball, he would probably just go by Guillermo. And on his baseball card, it might, if he had a nickname of Willie, it would say Guillermo, quote, Willie Hernandez. I don't know that he had a baseball card after he decided to be called Guillermo professionally. On the back of this card, it just says Willie. Aguada is located on the far western coast of Puerto Rico, and this was one of the first places that Columbus landed in Puerto Rico during his second expedition in 1493. Other Aguadans include Andres Torres, who was born in Paterson, New Jersey in 1978, but moved to Puerto Rico as a child and played 9 seasons in the big leagues, including 2010 when he won a World Series with the Giants. Also, Ismael Miranda, who was known as El Niño Bonito de la Salsa, the pretty boy of salsa. Ismael was a big salsa star. He was on the same record label as Celia Cruz, a really big star in the 70s, 80s. And in 1983, he was arrested in Chicago during a $500,000 heroin deal. He had just played a show at the Aragon Ballroom and was arrested in this hotel room in this huge drug deal, and his most played song on Spotify is called Caretas. And it's actually talking about the dangers of drug use. Ismael Miranda, a big star in Puerto Rican music. Aguada had around 20,000 people when Willie was born, now closer to 40,000. And Hernandez's life was not easy growing up. He was the 7th of 8 kids. His father, Dionisio, worked in a sugarcane factory, and his mother, Dominga, was a hotel housekeeper. Life was so difficult that rather than go to school, he decided in 1970 that he was going to go live with family in Chelsea, Massachusetts, and work in a factory. So he gets a factory job. On the side, he's also helping his brother deliver auto parts between Massachusetts and Maine. So they're just driving auto parts all around the Northeast. And he was the youngest cousin in the home, but he was also the most responsible. He said his cousins would work for a week, then take the next week off. They'd steal cars, steal car batteries. But he said that he didn't cause any trouble because he didn't have any time to. He was always working. But there was something missing in his life, and that was baseball. He loved baseball, and he wanted to play, but in Massachusetts, he couldn't find the right people to talk to get onto a competitive or good team. And so in 1972, he moves back to Puerto Rico and plays for a semi-pro team as an outfielder. A couple months later, that season ends. He joins another team. They're playing in a tournament, and they were short on pitchers. So the manager asks him to pitch, and it's this big tournament. There's a bunch of scouts there, and he goes 9 innings, wins the game, and after that, he was a pitcher. He made the all-star team of this semi-pro league, and with that honor came a chance to play in a tournament in Italy. There he pitched against American and Japanese teams and other young international players. That also got his game noticed by some scouts.
When the team returned to Puerto Rico, the Phillies approached Willie. He was not yet 19 years old and had only been pitching for a few months, but scout Ruben Amaro Sr. signed Willie with a $17,000 signing bonus, and he went to A-ball at Spartanburg. He started 26 games that first year, completing 13 of them. And that leads to a fun fact on the card that Willie was the Western Carolinas League All-Star in 1974. So for the year, he was 11-11 with 13 complete games, an ERA under 3, and a whip of 1.147 in 190 innings. The second season, he was split between AA Reading and AAA Toledo with a combined record of 14-6, an ERA right around 3, still as a starter, and 11 complete games that year. So he's really rising fast through the minors. He's already made it through 3 levels in his first 2 years.
He really was only a pitcher for a few seasons, so he's throwing all of these innings. He hadn't really tested his arm all that much. And in 1976, the Phillies AAA team is now in Oklahoma City. And Hernandez had his first rough season. His ERA rose to 4.5, and he had some injuries, missed a little bit of playing time. He was so close to the majors, but at this point, the Phillies didn't add him to the 40-man roster. It seemed like they had lost a little bit of faith in him, and that left him open to the Rule 5 draft, so other teams could come in and pick up players who aren't protected on their 40-man roster.
And the Cubs selected him. As a Rule 5 draftee, the Cubs had to add Willie to their 40-man roster. He ended up part of the Cubs' bullpen for the next 7 seasons. Hernandez said, "I had a fastball, a slider, and a bad changeup before I came to spring training, but my curveball is super now." That was after working with the Cubs' pitching coach. 1977 with the Cubs is the first line on the card, and it looks good. It's 67 games, 110 innings pitched. The Cubs that year had Willie and Paul Rushell serving as the lefty and righty setup men for Bruce Sutter.
Sutter was in his first full season as the Cubs closer, and he had a ridiculous season. Revisit the Bruce Sutter episode to learn more. He had a 1.34 ERA and 31 saves. All three of those relievers had over 100 innings pitched. Willie was great. He had an ERA under 2 well into July, but then the level of work led to that ERA rising a little bit, so it was just over 3 by the end of the year. He was tired, but he was a real competitor. He said, "I've been pitching a lot, and my fastball is going. The Cubs want me to get more rest, but when we get behind and we need a left-hander, I can't just sit on my butt."
That 3.03 ERA was an ERA plus of 145 for the Cubs, who went 81-81 that year. He followed it up with a decent year in 1978, but he only pitched 59 innings in 54 games, but a 107 ERA plus, so he's still better than average in the league. The Cubs of the 70s and most of the 80s, they're around 500 or worse almost all the time. The next couple of seasons were disappointing. 1979 started terribly for Willie. He allowed 3 earned runs without an out on opening day against the Mets. And then on May 17th against the Phillies at Wrigley, the wind was blowing out about 20 miles an hour. And you know what that means.
We have a 23-22 game. Dennis Lamp and Donnie Moore gave up 11 runs in the first 3 innings. Willie came in with 1 out in the top of the 3rd, down 11-6. He gives up 7 hits, 7 walks, and 6 earned runs over 2 2/3 innings. He leaves the game down 21-9. Dave Kingman hits 3 home runs. The Cubs come back to tie it 22-22. Bruce Sutter is in, facing Mike Schmidt in the 10th, and Mike Schmidt hits his second home run of the game to give the Phillies a 23-22 win. Hernandez had an ERA over 5 in 51 games on the year. Not a great year for him.
If you take out that game and his opening day game, probably knocks the whole run off of his ERA. In 1980, the Cubs tried him out as a starter, and that did not go so well. In 7 games as a starter, opponents had a slash line of 336, 428, 550. And he was 0-6 in those games with an ERA over 8. So it was time to go back to the bullpen.
Management made the right choice, putting him back in the bullpen. He was more effective, but mostly used in losses. The team was 8-38 in his relief appearances, and he had a 32-game run where he appeared in only one win.
Oh, man.
So his line looks respectable because as a reliever, he had a 2.9 ERA, but it was all in these disappointing games, no chance for a decision, really. In 1981, he actually didn't even make the Cubs opening day roster. He started at AAA. He made some starts at Iowa, pitched okay. He gets recalled in June, didn't get into a game, and then the strike happens. He comes back after the strike and was decent. In 12 appearances, 9 of them, he held opponents scoreless. So he's looking forward to 1982. He ends up making the team out of spring training. That's a good first step.
The Chicago Tribune said he came in with a new personality, confident, aggressive, and eager. When asked about his ups and downs and the fan reaction, Willie said, "I don't deserve all the boos, but when they boo me, that makes me happy because I'm going to show them they're wrong." He also had another motivation besides the fan energy, and that was a new contract. He said, "I'm here to help the ball club win games and get a pay raise. I came into this world poor and naked, but I don't want to die with no clothes on."
Willie, throughout his career, was motivated to make money. Coming from a desperate situation, he had priorities, and his priorities were making sure that his family was comfortable and making sure that he lived a comfortable life. And even though that sounds like he's looking for a raise, he wasn't a whiner. He was making $90,000, which was well below the average major league salary, which was $245,000 at the time. He was a professional. His teammates knew it. His teammate Bill Campbell said that Hernandez was one of the most professional men I've ever been around. Someone who gives 150% and who you'll never get an excuse from. He felt that he was a good reliever and he should be compensated as such.
Yeah, and he ended up with a good season in 1982, 75 appearances, which was fourth in the National League, ERA of 3 with 10 saves. The Cubs also had Lee Smith, Bill Campbell, and Dick Tidrow dividing up the closer duties. There was good cooperation between the team, eating up a lot of bullpen innings. After the 1982 season, what we see in Willie's bio is that he had a momentous offseason in the Puerto Rican Winter League. Got some advice from fellow pitchers that changed his career.
In the Winter League, he was coached by former All-Stars like Juan Pizarro and former Cy Young winner Mike Cuellar. And then later in spring training by his teammate on the Cubs, Fergie Jenkins. Pizarro told him that he was taking too much time between pitches and he should do his thinking in the bullpen, not on the mound. He just needs to get the ball and get it to the plate. Cuellar taught Willie how to throw a screwball. Willie started relying more on the screwball in 1983. Jenkins taught him to throw a cut fastball in spring training. He used these pitches together to take his game to another level. He had been pretty good in some seasons, pretty mediocre in some others. The combination of the cut fastball that looked like a standard fastball, but when Willie would throw it on the inner half of the plate to righties, it looked like a fastball that was hittable, and then it would break in on their hands, leading to weak contact, either pop-ups or grounders. The screwball that he would pair with it would dive down and away from righties. So he would use that when he's ahead in the count because it often ended up out of the zone. So the combination of these two pitches, he said it really allowed him to throw inside to batters, something he hadn't felt he was effective at before. He also had a decent curveball that he used on lefties, what was called a sneaky fast fastball. And something that you see on his 1988 Topps card, this look. He had an intimidating look. For a guy with such big glasses, kind of bushy curly hair and a big mustache, he doesn't look intimidating, but he would scowl and chew tobacco and stare down batters. And he said, "You think I look mean when I pitch? I guess it's because I'm hungry to take the batter out. I'm hungry to make some money."
Yes, that's an excellent quote. After all of that off-season work, learning new pitches and developing and improving his game, he started the season pretty well with the Cubs, pitching in 11 games, striking out 18 batters in 19 innings. But then on May 22nd, the Cubs traded him to the Phillies, the team that had first signed him. They traded him for pitcher Bill Johnson, who appeared in 14 games for the Cubs, and that was it for his major league career. Also, Dick Ruthven, a pitcher who was near the end of his career, who was okay in 1983 for the Cubs and then faded over the next few years. Meanwhile, Willie joined the bullpen of a team that was in the playoff hunt, and he was a setup man for closer Al Holland along with Ron Reed.
He started relying even more on the screwball because catcher Bo Diaz, quote, loved that pitch. And I did read that the screwball was more used by pitchers from Latin America, and Bo Diaz, as he was from Venezuela, was more used to calling for that pitch. Willie was excited to play for a contender, and he didn't seem to mind being a setup man. At this point, he didn't have the expectation that he was going to be the closer. He ended up allowing no earned runs in 16 of his first 17 appearances, and he was good in 63 games for the NL East champs. He went 8-4 with 7 saves, had a 1.10 ERA plus, so better than average on a winning team. He had some notable appearances, including a 2-inning win on July 3rd against the Mets, where he struck out all 6 batters that he faced. On September 28th against his old team, the Cubs, Willie comes in the 4th inning, pitches a scoreless inning, and because the starting pitcher didn't go to the 5th inning, Willie ends up earning the win, and that win secured the NL East title.
The Phillies won 90 games that year and faced the Dodgers in the NLCS. Willie did not appear in the Phillies' 3-1 win in that series. He made his first appearance in the World Series against the Orioles in Game 2. He came on in the 5th inning, down 3-1, struck out the first batter he faced, and then the second was Dan Ford.
For batting helmets. We faced this situation 2 years ago when Goose Gossage struck Ron Say in a very similar manner. Test pitch got away, obviously, from Hernandez, who immediately sprinted toward the plate, realizing what had happened. Ford has been.
He said, "It was the first time in my career that I ever hit anybody in the head." He said, "I rushed down there to see how he was. I was scared." And Ford had also never been hit in the head before. He ends up staying in the game. Hernandez got out of the inning without giving up a run, but a really scary moment for him. He ends up pitching to one batter in Game 4, giving up a sacrifice fly, not an earned run as it was an inherited runner. In the decisive Game 5 of that series, down 3-1, Willie came on in the 6th. He was perfect through 6, 7, and 8, but the Phillies couldn't overcome a 5-0 deficit. They lost the game and lost the series.
One side note about 1983, Willie, as a batter, hit 400 that year. So remember, for the Immaculate Grid, Willie hit 500 for the Cubs and 385 for the Phillies, if those squares happen to show up.
Also, if you search for highlights of Willie Hernandez on YouTube, you will see Willie Hernandez with the worst swing of all time.
This is pretty horrible. Inside pitch, Willie takes almost like half of a swing and then just falls down.
Not only does he fall down, he falls like on his face, like straight forward. He didn't lose the bat, but he may as well have just given up at that point. That was a really bad swing. I don't think this swing is representative of his hitting ability. He hit 206 for his career as a relief pitcher. That's not so bad.
Going into 1984, the Tigers were in need of a left-handed reliever because the American League was full of strong left-handed bats. And Tigers closer Senior Smoke, Aurelio Lopez, was good against righties in 1983, holding them to a 162 average. But against lefties, he was 257. And the Tigers felt that this was one place that could get them over the hump. They finished second in their division in 1983 and thought maybe one more piece could get them all the way to the promised land. And so on March 24th, 1984, the Tigers sent the Phillies an unhappy role player in John Walkenfuss, and also an outfielder who was surplus to requirements, Glenn Wilson, Glenbow. In exchange, the Phillies sent Willie and first baseman Dave Bergman to Detroit.
Dave Bergman had been acquired from the Giants for Alejandro Sanchez, so he had never played for the Phillies. Walkenfuss would have a decent 1984, then be done after 1985. Glenn Wilson would have some decent seasons, make the 1985 All-Star game, and have a sweet Glenbow poster. The Tigers, on the other hand, would dominate in 1984 and win the World Series. And this trade is said to be the thing that pushed them over the top. The public perception was not immediately positive. They lost a young potential star in Glenbow and a popular utility player in exchange for a first baseman who had no power and was 31 years old on his fifth team in Dave Bergman, and a relief pitcher who had been fine. But Sparky Anderson would later say, "When they got me Hernandez, I knew we'd won the pennant." Whether he was just saying that later on or whether he believed it, it worked out pretty well for him. As we discussed in the Tom Brookins episode, this was not a team of superstars. Guys like Dave Bergman would play important roles for the Tigers in 1984, and they would win 104 games. Bergman ends up starting 114 games at first base, hitting .273. The team comes out of the gate 35-5. You would think for a guy who's going to win the Cy Young and the MVP that Willie would have had a lot to do with that. In those first 40 games and that huge stretch, he appeared in 19 of them. He got 7 saves and a win, but he had an ERA of 3.03. He doesn't look like he's going to go win the Cy Young. Opponents struggled against him. They hit .227 with a .311 slugging percentage in that stretch. Pretty good, but nothing extraordinary. Aurelio Lopez was actually better during that stretch. He had 6 saves with a 1.47 ERA and held opponents to a .164 batting average.
Willie got better and better as the year went on. He ended the first half with a .215 ERA and 16 saves in 75 innings. He made the All-Star game, pitching the 8th inning, and gave up a homer to Dale Murphy. In the second half of the season, though, he was even better. In 40 games, he had a whip under 1, .815, an ERA of only 1.66, and he allowed an OPS of 460, a slash line of 175, 232, 228. Very impressive second half of the season. As the Tigers ran away with the American League East, they won the division by 15 games. Just to cap it off, Willie didn't blow a save until the 160th game of the season. So he was 32 of 33 in save opportunities, which meant if you gave him a lead and a ball at the end of the game, you were going to end up winning the game.
He led the league with 80 appearances, struck out 112 against 36 walks in 140 innings. In those 32 saves, he was also getting multiple inning saves. He had a ridiculous .204 ERA plus, 100% better than average. To keep things interesting, as the Tigers are romping their way to the AL East title, Sparky Anderson starts talking about Willie as an MVP candidate. Nowadays, we don't often think about relief pitchers for MVP or Cy Young, but in the previous decade, Mike Marshall, Sparky Lyle, Bruce Sutter, and Raleigh Fingers had all won Cy Young Awards. A couple years before, Fingers had also won the MVP in 1981. So Willie Hernandez's candidacy for the MVP was pretty unexpected and pretty ridiculous. This is a career reliever who had never had more than 10 saves or an ERA under 3. But in this season, the Tigers didn't have a 20-game winner, and Willie was their most valuable pitcher by wins above replacement. He had a 4.8 WAR, which was good for 6th among American League pitchers. He led the league in win probability added thanks to his dominance in high leverage situations, and the Tigers win the AL East and they go on to face the Royals in the ALCS.
Yeah, they swept that series in 3 games. Willie appeared in all 3 of them. He gave up 1 run in 4 innings and earned a save in the clincher of Game 3. In the World Series, the Tigers faced the Padres in the World Series. Willie appeared in Game 2, which was a loss. He pitched a scoreless 8th inning, but the Tigers were unable to come back in the 9th. In Game 3, he held the Padres to no runs on 1 hit over 2 1/3 innings in Game 3 to earn the save. And in the decisive Game 5, he came on in the 8th inning with the Tigers up 5-3. He gave up a home run to Kurt Bevacqua before getting out of the inning. In the bottom of that inning, Kirk Gibson extended the lead to 8-4, which iced it. Hernandez got Gary Templeton to ground out, gave up a single to famous Frenchman Bruce Bochy, got Alan Wiggins to pop out, and then he faced Tony Gwynn. After going down 1-0 in the count, Gwynn hit a high pop fly to left field, and Larry Herndon made the catch for the final out. Willie was mobbed on the mound. A fitting end as he was on the mound to clinch the division, clinch the pennant, and the World Series title.
After that out is recorded, his teammates mob him on the mound. You have these crazy scenes in Detroit. Everybody's running onto the field. The players run off into the locker room. Sparky Anderson is giving his remarks, gets a call from the president. It's really a great scene and a great fitting end for Hernandez on what was just a remarkable season. And after that season, as Sparky predicted, he's in contention for these postseason awards. He's voted the Cy Young winner, which is kind of understandable. He was a dominant pitcher on the best team in baseball. He got 12 first-place votes to Dan Quisenberry's 9. By 1984 standards, it wasn't outrageous. They weren't really looking at advanced stats. These were the top two closers on the two division winners. Neither of those teams had a dominant ace. And both of those guys pitched a lot of multi-inning save situations. And this is different from modern-day single-inning closers. By modern metrics, Dave Steeb or Burt Blyleven could probably have been the winners of this year's Cy Young, but Burt Blyleven was on a sub-500 Cleveland team, and Dave Steeb was only 16-8. If he had won 20 games, maybe it would be different. So the dominant closer on the most dominant team wins the Cy Young. It's not so out of line, and even by wins above replacement standard, he was good. But he also won the MVP, and Sparky used the secret, spoke it into existence. He's one of only 10 players in history to win MVP and Cy Young in the same season. The guys who did it before him were Don Newcomb, Sandy Koufax, Bob Gibson, Denny McClain, Rowley Fingers, and now Willie Hernandez, a journeyman relief pitcher. Along with Fingers and later Dennis Eckersley, he's one of only 3 relievers to win the AL, Cy Young, and MVP. Sparky had said, if Hernandez isn't the MVP, there's no justice. But if you look at the votes...
It seems a little extreme.
Yes. Of the 27 players who got AL MVP votes, 14 of them were more valuable by wins above replacement, including the 1983 MVP and 27th place finisher Cal Ripken Jr. Cal Ripken had the highest wins above replacement in the AL that year at 10, which is the same as what Shohei Ohtani got last year. He got one vote, possibly because he won it the year prior and his season looked a little bit worse on paper, didn't have as many RBIs. Willie got 16 first place votes. Nobody else on his team got a first place vote. Second place went to Kent Herbeck, who got 5, as did Dan Quisenberry. Alan Trammell would have been a legitimate MVP candidate. Instead, he finished 9th. Kirk Gibson finished 6th. Willie himself said, it was unbelievable. It was like I have another win, like winning the World Series again. Winning these two awards in the same year for a relief pitcher, it's kind of difficult, kind of impossible. Not really impossible, as it had just been done 2 years before, but incredibly unlikely. Joe Posnanski said he was one of the unlikeliest MVP winners. He had Willie at number 3. Saying the only reason he wasn't number 1 was that MVP voters went out of their minds for a while with relief pitchers.
Yeah, I don't know. Sparky just manifested it, and the voters took his word for it when he said getting Willie on the team was the sign to him that they would win it all. After that amazing season, Willie said, heck, if I'm MVP, I may be able to ask for the world. I'm hungry to make some money. And he exercised an option in his contract that allowed him to demand a trade so he could try to cash in. The Tigers had to make a decision by March 15th, 1985, either trade him, re-sign him with presumably a big new contract, or let him be a free agent. Willie didn't necessarily want to leave, but the deadline and the awards helped him with negotiation. He said, I've never forgotten what I had to do to get here. I want my children to have what I didn't have. He wanted legacy-building wealth, and he got it. He signed a 5-year deal in January worth over $5 million. In 1985 money, this is a lot of money. With that new deal, he had financial security, but it also brought pressure from the fans to perform. The Tigers won 85 games the next season, unable to replicate their performance. Willie was still very good. He earned another All-Star appearance. In 74 games, he pitched 106 innings with a 2.7 ERA, a 151 ERA plus, saving 31 games, a whip under one, and just the second reliever after Hoyt Wilhelm with consecutive seasons of more than 100 innings pitched, no starts, and a whip of less than one. Only Willie, Hoyt Wilhelm, and Bruce Sutter had two of those seasons in their careers.
A really good season, but compared to the near perfection in 1984, fans expected more after that big contract. He had 9 blown saves compared to 1 in 1984. He had a stretch of 5 losses in 14 days. Fans started booing. He was frustrated, and Sparky was worried about him because Hernandez really took those boos personally. And it would get worse. In 1986, the Tigers won 87 games, but they missed the playoffs, and some frustrations mounted further. Hernandez made the All-Star game, but he had to skip it due to shoulder pain. He saved 24 games, but he also gave up 13 home runs. 9 of those home runs tied or put the opponents ahead. In September, he lost the closer role. Sparky Anderson said, "Nobody can live like that. All the frustration of losing falls on him because he's there when the game is on the line." Hernandez accepted the decision and dedicated himself to winning the job back, but he was never a regular closer again.
In 1987, the Tigers used a closer by committee setup with Mike Hennemann, Eric King, Willie, and Mark Thurmond combining for 31 saves. Willie dealt with injuries and gave up more hits than innings pitched for the first time since 1981. He was used in different roles. He had 4 holds, but also blew 5 of his 13 save opportunities and didn't get the closer role back that season. In the playoffs, he made 1 appearance in the ALCS against the Twins. This was game 1. The top of the 8th, the Tigers took the lead off of closer Jeff Reardon 5-4. In the bottom, Doyle Alexander got into trouble. Kirby Puckett doubled home the tying run. Mike Hennemann came in and loaded the bases. And so Willie was brought in to face pinch hitter Don Baylor, who hit a single to drive in a run. Then he gave up a 2-run double to Tom Bernanski. That carried Minnesota to an 8-5 victory. The Twins ended up winning the ALCS and the World Series. But as a consolation prize, the Tigers, as a playoff team in either 1986 or 1987, were featured in the Nintendo game RBI Baseball, which means we go to the RBI corner with Brian. And we are back in the RBI corner. Brian, welcome back to the show. And first, a mea culpa. We neglected to bring you on for Tom Brookins. And so we're asking you to do a twin bill with Willie Hernandez and Tom Brookins.
Well, thanks for having me back. And I'm always happy to play too. And especially if we can talk twice as long about the Detroit Tigers and RBI Baseball, I'm certainly game for that. This is my team in RBI Baseball. We covered them in the Lou Whitaker episode, I believe, most recently, but we haven't talked about them too often, and I'm always happy to be evangelical about them. Now, what makes them so good? Well, they have a lot of power. They have good speed at the top of the lineup in Alan Trammell and Kirk Gibson, and they have a very left-handed lineup, which is really valuable in the game. In terms of pitching, maybe I'd call it just enough to get by. The regular lineup is incredibly strong, so you're probably only making one substitution in the lineup, and that's taking Larry Herndon out and bringing in Pat Sheridan or possibly Bill Madlock. And once you've made that substitution, every single player in the lineup is a home run threat. For pitching, again, it's more about being just good enough. Doyle Alexander is very good, and he has a lot of movement to keep hitters off balance. So what you want to do is go as long as you can with Doyle Alexander, use a lot of curve on your pitches, and hopefully you've won the game already before you have to think about your bullpen. So for me, the Tigers are my favorite team in RBI baseball, and to me, they're the best team in the game. Others might argue for Boston or California or maybe even the All-Star teams, but I'll take the Tigers every time.
For these two players, Willie Hernandez and Tom Brookins, how do they stack up?
So thinking about these two players specifically, I view them as a wonderful lesson in not trusting the stats that you see on the screen as a reflection of the player's capabilities. Tom Brookins is listed as a 241 hitter with 13 home runs. That's also what his stats actually were in 1987, which is the year that they used for the game. Willie Hernandez is shown as having a 1.11 ERA. I'm not quite sure where that's taken from. You see this across RBI baseball with players like Tony Armas, where they have stats that aren't reflective of the years in question. Tom Brookins does not hit like a 241 hitter with 13 home runs. If we start with him, in his career, Tom Brookins had 71 homers in over 3,800 at-bats. He's a career slugging percentage of 367. So he's not really a power hitter. If anything, he was probably more known for his defense or for being the guy at third base for the Tigers. But in RBI baseball, he has the second most power on the Tigers, behind only Darrell Evans on the team, and he has better power than players like Jim Rice and Mike Schmidt and Jack Clark and Kent Herbeck and others who we consider to be real sluggers. Now, trying to think about why this might be the case, I suspect one can only conclude that the game's programmers valued mustaches over on-field performance, and his video game slugging capability channels the power of his ultra-robust Tom Selleck-esque mustache that he sported across the 80s. And given that this game reflects baseball in the 80s, perhaps this was in fact a reasonable choice.
I think it's the only explanation supported by the facts.
And because they couldn't put a mustache on his video game character, they had to give him some kind of bonus.
Turning then to Willie Hernandez, notably there are no first names in RBI baseball. You're really just getting a six-character representation of the player's last name. So you don't have to make that troubling Willie versus Guillermo choice. Perhaps this was another deft move by the programmers to sidestep being faced with that dilemma. He's one of the Tigers' two relievers, and he has two great attributes for him. One, he's left-handed. He's the only lefty pitcher in the Tigers, which makes him a great option against lefty sluggers that you face in some of the better teams. And the second is the differential between his regular pitch and his fastball. Now, he's not the hardest thrower in the game. He's not like a Juan Berenguer type. But as we see in actual baseball, sometimes what matters the most is the differential between pitches, not the absolute speed of the pitches themselves. I wouldn't call him a great pitcher. He's definitely not a pitcher worthy of a 1.11 ERA, but he is a useful pitcher, and he's more of a guy who has a role.
Normally we'd ask here, do you play them? But for Tom Brookins, we know you play them. After the Tom Brookins episode, we got comment after comment after comment on social media about what a hero in RBI baseball Tom Brookins is.
Tom Brookins is fantastic, and what's crazy about it is he's a number eight hitter. And many teams in the game, you're subbing out the number eight hitter because that's one of the weakest players in the lineup, and usually there's a better player on the bench. But you don't want to make the amateur mistake of looking at his stats on the screen and thinking that he's the player that you sub out. To me, this is a real litmus test for an experienced RBI baseball player. If you haven't played that much, you're probably looking at that 241 average and thinking, oh, I've got to bring somebody in off the bench. But if you've played RBI baseball, you know that you do want to sub out Larry Herndon, who's hitting 324, and bring in Pat Sheridan or Bill Madlock, but you definitely want to keep Tom Brookins in your lineup.
How about for Willie Hernandez?
For Willie Hernandez, it really depends. There's a 10-run slaughter rule in RBI baseball, something that we're familiar with from T-ball and Little League, perhaps, but not the sort of thing you see in MLB. And ideally, if you're playing with the Tigers, you're pitching Doyle Alexander the whole game, and you're winning by 10 runs at the end of an inning, and the game is over. But that isn't always the case. And if it's not the case, then Willie Hernandez has a real value to you, especially if you're facing, say, a big inning with a number of lefty sluggers coming up. Then you've got a lefty pitcher on your bench that you can bring in to face those players. I'd say you might be using him more often if you could face the Tigers as the Tigers, since the Tigers have such a left-handed lineup. But RBI baseball actually doesn't allow you to both have two players playing as the same team. So the Tigers are never facing the Tigers, and as a result, you might not use Willie Hernandez as often as you otherwise would.
Brian, can we be sure that this is actually Tom Brookins in the game and not Tim Brookins?
There's no way to be sure. I think one of the challenges in this game is because there's no first name, you would never know. But even then, in some cases, you might have a first initial. And because Tim and Tom are both T's, we would never know. It may be that they've combined forces like Voltron. And as a consequence, all of this Tom Brookins power that we'd have no reason to suspect from his career is a function of taking both him and his brother together.
Well, Brian, you said to not trust the stats, but we could trust this stat. This segment is undefeated. Thank you for coming back, and we'll see you next time.
Great. Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
In 1988, with a big salary and a diminished role on the pitching staff, Willie was frustrated. During spring training, he dumped a bucket of ice water on Detroit Free Press columnist Mitch Albom, saying, "You turned the fans against me." David, this seems like a very harsh thing to do for a guy who wrote the book Tuesdays with Maury.
According to Albom, Hernandez was upset with a column in which he directly quoted Hernandez saying, "Bleep the fans. I don't give a bleep about the fans. I don't care if you write it. The way they treat me, bleep them."
Oh, that's going to end well.
Whenever you're saying, "I don't care if you write it," you probably can't be too mad when somebody writes it. After this, Hernandez stopped talking to the media, but the incident was later used humorously by the Free Press in TV ads. Also this year, maybe as a reset, frustrated with his lack of performance on the field, Willie decided to be announced as Guillermo. I don't know if the fans were booing and chanting Willie, and it's more difficult to chant Guillermo, but this didn't help his relationship with the fans. They were just confused. And he had gone as Willie for years prior. Everyone had called him Willie, but at this point he decided to be called Guillermo. He started to be called Guillermo, don't call me Willie Hernandez. This was an unfortunate incident and also coincided with the tail end of his career. As for his play, he was pretty good as Mike Hanneman's setup man. In 63 games, he did earn 10 saves and had a 1.25 ERA plus. He also had 8 holds, but he blew 5 saves. In his last 10 appearances, he didn't give up an earned run, but he did have 2 blown saves due to inherited runners who he allowed to score. In 1989, the last year of his 5-year contract, an elbow injury limited him to only 32 games. His ERA was 5.74. He had 15 saves, but the Tigers lost 103 games. His season ended in August with elbow surgery, and he was released after the season. He tried to make a couple comebacks for Oakland, then for Philly in 1991, but he didn't make the roster, and then signed with the Blue Jays on a AAA contract, appeared in 8 games at Syracuse, and then went back to Puerto Rico, where he owned a construction company, coached some semi-pro ball, but then in 1995, he's 40 years old, and a Yankees scout saw him throwing BP, suggested that he give baseball one more try. This was during the strike, so he would have been a replacement player if the season had started. But when the strike was over, he ends up going to AAA Columbus and pitching in 22 games. It didn't go great. He had an ERA over 7, and he decided to call it a career.
So closing the book on Willie Hernandez, 13 seasons in the major leagues, a record of 70 wins and 63 losses, an ERA of 3.38. That was in 744 games. He also had 147 saves. His ERA plus was 119 and a career whip of 1.245. He had 3 All-Star appearances, 1 Cy Young, 1 MVP, and 1 World Series ring. How about in retirement?
He went back to his construction business, and it was successful. He later sold it and bought a cattle ranch. He also coached his sons and some semi-pro teams, and he traveled back to Detroit regularly to make appearances, particularly at events honoring the 1984 team. But he also had some serious health problems. He had asthma, diabetes, and several strokes. In 2007, he had heart problems that forced him to go to Boston and have a pacemaker installed. He said that he died for a minute while on the table getting that pacemaker installed. But he was revived because he said, "God's got my heart, so nobody is going to bother my heart." His health improved for a bit. He split his time between Puerto Rico and his home in Florida, and he was well enough to travel in 2019 to throw out the first pitch for Tigers opening day for the 35th anniversary season of that 1984 World Series victory. That day, he also addressed the Willie versus Guillermo debate. He was asked which he preferred, and he said, "That's overrated. I don't care. I don't care because if you can call me a son of God, that's better." And so at this point, he had made peace after all of his health issues, and that was his last major public appearance in Detroit. His health declined further, and he was unable to travel as much, and he ended up passing away on November 20th of 2023, just 6 days after his 69th birthday. He was survived by his wife, 5 children, and 1 grandchild.
So, David, this episode started with a big mustache, big glasses, kind of a mean stare. And now we've got a relief pitcher who won the MVP and Cy Young. So now looking at his career, what should we think?
In that 2019 first pitch outing, he didn't have a mustache. He had his hair cut. So from that curly hair that we see in this picture, he wasn't wearing a hat. He doesn't look like the same intimidating guy. He looked friendly and joyous. And I think that he was very well regarded among his teammates, among fans, and especially by Sparky Anderson. Sparky said when the Tigers won the World Series, first I thanked God, then I thanked Willie Hernandez. And when we look back at that 1984 season, I think a lot of people look at these 1980s MVP votes and Cy Young votes for closers, and they think, how valuable is that guy? Well, again, Sparky Anderson thought that he was the most valuable player. I'm going to take his word for it. I don't know if he would have gotten my vote nowadays. And can a closer truly be the most valuable player? Probably not. But lots of people in the Tigers organization and fandom believed that that trade made the Tigers World Series champs. And that season was a statistical outlier in all of baseball history. If you look at a Stathead search of every pitcher with more than 75 games, there's only 48 who had an ERA plus over 200. Among those 48, only one guy pitched more innings than Willie's 140, and that's Old Hoss Radbourne. So when we're bringing up a guy named Old Hoss from 1884, you have to know that we're talking about an all-time great. Old Hoss threw 600 plus innings. It was a different time. They didn't believe in arms or having to use them after retirement. But Willie was a different kind of closer than we see right now. And his teammates loved him as well. Lance Parrish said he was a great guy in the clubhouse with a great work ethic. Sparky asked him to do things that aren't asked of many closers in today's game, and he never failed to answer the bell. Kirk Gibson, no stranger to being cocky, said Willie was so bleeping cocky, and he had a reason to be. His attitude was bring it on. He had confidence and made sure everyone else did too. And if you didn't, he'd call you out. Willie loved being a Tiger. Even in retirement, he would still follow the Tigers even when they were going through difficult times. He said, I played for three different teams, but I want to be known as a Tiger, and I will always be a Tiger. He loved his family, and he worked his butt off to make sure that they were well off forever. During the 1984 World Series, he told the New York Daily News, I haven't worked any harder than my father did. I've just been lucky enough to be a baseball player. He had no shame about saying, I'm in this for the money. And he led a comfortable, if slightly in bad health, retirement. And he's been able to pass that along to his kids and give them a better life than he had growing up.
So many of the stories that we've had from players from Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic and elsewhere in the Caribbean and Central and South America during this time, the stories are so similar. Growing up in poverty, hoping for a better life, getting a lucky break, and working really, really hard to make sure they make it, maybe Ray Quiñones aside, that commitment and that drive is so amazing to see, and you can see it in how his teammates and coaches responded to it and the difference that it made on the field. One other thing, though, about the name that just occurs to me that we've mentioned on the show before is that 1970s and 1980s America is just really not that savvy about the names of people who grew up in other cultures. And the thought of, oh, no, actually call me by the name that I was born with, you know, that was confusing or that was really difficult. Every Latin player would just be called Chico or Bob or...
Or Senior Smoke.
Right. Or Senior Smoke, or the two Senior Smokes, right? They're both Latin and they both pitch fast, so we're going to call them both Senior Smoke. I just hope that we've done better, that things are better now and that we can get better in the future on that because our names are important. And Willie was an important player too. So thank you for this story today, David. And thank you to you at home. If you're hungry to go make some money, just tell us all about it. You can find us on socials at 1988 Tops Podcast. Thanks a lot. And we'll see you next week.